starting right now. Oh my god.
All right. History of Bungie Part 2 Combat Evolves.
Yeah,
welcome to Hick Continues Metagame, the show where we go beyond the games and talk about the game creators who make the games and the history that they have conducted. That's a weird way to phrase that, but this I kind of forgot what my intro was, because it's only the second episode, so fuck off.
Sometimes you just dive into a sentence.
And hey, this is our second episode. Fuck you.
Yeah, I'm figuring it out. I haven't got all rid of your shit. Just let me do it.
Hey, welcome to Hit Continue Metagaming. Go fuck yourself.
The meta is for go fuck yourself. I am Greg Pilkington.
Hey.
Joining me is Scott the Croc Watmo.
The croc?
Yep, the croc Watmo.
The animal or the shoe?
Both.
Okay. And James Baby Shorts Pantuso.
James Meta Shorts Pantuso.
There you go.
Oh god, where have your shorts gone?
They're pants! That's the meta!
Oh my god. Meta pants. I'm gonna say the croc because A, I was put on the spot. And my goal is to just rhyme your name with as many things as possible.
Croc and Scott don't rhyme.
No. They're, what are they called? Phonetic rhymes.
They're near rhymes.
Yeah, near rhymes. Oh. Yeah, exactly. Which is, in hip-hop world, basically a rhyme.
It's close. It's good enough.
Yeah. It's good enough.
If you focus on it, you won't like it as much. But if you just let it happen, okay.
If it's good enough for Eminem, it's good enough for us.
Exactly. That's the motto of metagame.
Eminem probably likes Halo.
Dude, everyone likes Halo.
Yeah.
I know that
we're talking.
Yeah, I know that people feel sometimes, Halo, take it or leave it, but nobody dislikes Halo. And if you do, fuck you. Fuck you.
Hey, welcome to Continue Metagaming. Go fuck yourself.
All right, so I've named it Part 2 Combat Evolves.
Nice.
We'll get into it, yeah? Unless you guys have any notes from the first one. That's what I should be doing. Sorry, my bad. Where we left off was that Bungie had just got sold or bought by Microsoft after having a 19.9% share with Take-Two, which resulted in them losing the Myth series and the Oni series, which were the two ongoing projects that they had at the time of Microsoft's buyout. And that's where we left off on last episode. And so, yeah.
Interesting.
So, enter Halo Combat Evolved, released in 2001, an exclusive launch title for the original Xbox.
Was it a launch title?
Yes, it was. This one, well, this is the truest of the heavy hitters for Bungie. Bungie was put on the map by hits like Marathon and Myth, but with Combat Evolved, Bungie rocketed to a household name, which I think is pretty fair.
Yeah, this is when they became the
Halo people.
Yeah, because here's the thing. If we look at the PS2, for example, right? The PS2, you can list off a whole bunch of series that sort of, quote-unquote, defined the PS2, right? You know, you got the Final Fantasies, you know, you've got other
Persona.
Games. Persona. Yeah, the Persona series. Yeah, yep. Got Persona 3.
And 4.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. And 4 as well.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, there's, I mean, I'm blanking right now because, of course, I'm on the spot.
Well, Jak and Daxter, Ratchet and Clank were huge on the PlayStation 2. We had the Gran Turismo that was on the PlayStation 2 was massive and got a lot of people into gaming there.
Anyway,
yeah.
The point that somebody had a PlayStation 2 and somebody didn't.
I did have a PlayStation 2. Welcome to Hit Continue Metagaming. Go fuck yourself.
Make your point.
There was several games that defined the PS2 as a successful console.
Mm-hmm.
You ask somebody to name an original Xbox game, Halo.
Halo.
Done.
100% Halo.
99 people out of 100 will say Halo.
And there's a reason for that. And it's because Halo is a milestone in gaming, much like the original Mario was a milestone in gaming back in 88? Something 87, like that.
I think. 87?
Anyways. So, the development for Halo originally started back in 97, and as was custom for Bungie at the time, was originally a game that was going to be designed for the Mac. Its first iteration actually started as an RTS, which wasn't quite the RTT that we discussed in Myth, which was real-time tactics, which was basically an RTS without the unit creation and structure development. It's just unit management, per se. Yeah, it was an RTS that would be a sci-fi counterpart to what the company was creating in Myth. However, around mid-1998, in an effort to innovate the way a player could control units, Seropian and crew realized it would be much more fun to give players the ability to personally control the vehicles, and Halo became a third-person shooter instead.
Ooh.
During this time, the original game was given the working title Monkey Nuts. Seriously? That's the name of it. Which was then later switched to BLAM with an exclamation mark, which is...
I mean, that's not Monkey Nuts.
Nope, it's not Monkey Nuts.
Trending better.
Yeah, and similar to what they had with the first Bungie game, which was GNOP from Alex Seropian. Because it was GNOP with an exclamation mark as well. But because Jones couldn't bring himself to tell his mother the name Monkey Nuts, BLAM renamed... Yeah, sorry. It was renamed BLAM because of
because
Jones
he couldn't
tell
go
his
to
mother.
His mother and say I was working on a game called Monkey Nuts.
Yeah. Exactly. And then BLAM was renamed into Halo by Paul Russell. The name was still contentious, but Bungie felt the name was evocative and descriptive, so it stuck. The Combat Evolved was then added later by Microsoft's marketing team to describe that there's an actual shooter in this game called Halo.
There's combat, in Halo.
Yeah. Other names in consideration. Did you guys know any of these?
Monkey Nuts.
No. In consideration for the actual release. Monkey Nuts is always a working title.
Yeah, Monkey Nuts.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Robot Soldier Guy.
Nope. We have the Crystal Palace.
Doom.
Nope. We have Solipsis. Hard Vacuum. Yeah, that's right. Hard Vacuum. Star Maker and Star Shield. So I think Halo was the right choice on this one.
Yeah, I mean, I would be, like, fine with some of those, I guess.
Which one?
Hard Vacuum. Obviously.
Hard Vacuum reminds me of the skit from the original Scream, where the police constable Dewey, is like, never go into my room when I'm vacuuming! Because he's...
There's a Whitest Kids You Know sketch about this called You're Gonna Rip Your Dick Off.
Really explains the joke.
Yeah.
In 99, Bungie demoed the first glimpse of Halo at Macworld. This itself was no small feat. Peter Tamti, Bungie's then executive VP, used his former contacts at Mac to get Jones and then signed cutscene director Joseph Staten an exclusive interview with Steve Jobs. Jobs loved what he saw and gave them the spot at Macworld front stage.
Neato.
He actually introduced Jones and Staten. And people got fucking hyped. Originally, the game was promised to be released on Mac and Windows. It featured an open world with reactive terrain, variable weather, and even spent shell casings, all of which was clearly scrapped in its final form.
So many people advertise variable weather and then it never comes in.
Yeah.
It's literally in no games.
To a certain degree. I mean, A, Just Cause 3.
Yeah, I mean, it's in games. It's in Red Dead Redemption.
There was a day-night cycle in...
That's
Ocarina
not
of Time. It's, you know, it's time.
It's not weather, though. That's not what we're talking about.
Now, along with the partnership with Take-Two, Bungie was expecting to get a buyout at some point down the pipeline. They were worried by what that would mean for the company, and after some pretty solid offers from giants like Activision, this is actually, Activision was bidding for Bungie way back in 2000, the excellence of the first showing of Halo got Microsoft involved in the process, and they were eventually offered to Microsoft.
And let me tell you, nobody, and I mean nobody, outbids Mr. Bill.
Not at that point. And Bill was all over this project as well. The original Xbox, Bill was looking forward to getting his own game console.
Yeah.
So it's interesting to see what could have been if Bill Gates wasn't motherfucking Bill Gates throwing the money down for Bungie.
I mean, to be fair, if I was worth $50 billion, I would probably also want custom video games.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, hell yeah. Like,
your job is to make me something I will enjoy.
Make me my own game.
Yeah. With the buyout, Bungie was confident they could really focus on what mattered, making games, and move their entire operation from Chicago to Redmond, Washington, which was where Microsoft was, one of their head offices was located. To finalize the move, Seropian and Jones actually rented out their very first office, the one that looked like a Resident Evil map. they rented it from the current tenant, and Bungie partied hard to celebrate their next chapter. So that's how they left Chicago, is by absolutely frat housing the shit out of their very first office.
Honestly, given the like demographic of Halo going forward after Halo 1,
mm-hmm.
the fact that they frat housed the fuck out of their office is kind of on brand.
I know, it feels right. And I thought it was just a fun little tidbit to throw into this history of Bungie. However, with the move, the crunch was on. Bungie needed to turn this long-running list of great ideas into a comprehensive console shooter that would truly justify their recent acquisition in about a year. The team was excited. There was a thrill to create a game that, no matter who was playing it, they all played with the same specs and with the same controller as everybody else. Basically, the tagline for why consoles exist, even in the first place, versus the highly more customizable PCs.
Standardization.
Jones, at this point, rallied the idea that the players should be closer to the action, which made the game what we know of it as of today. A first-person shooter. So they eventually just kept on bringing in the camera closer and closer and closer until they're like, what are we doing? Just
yeah.
put it right in his head. Development was crazy here. Staten was, in his words, putting duct tape on the story beats. Writers Eric Trotman and Brandon Bourne punched up the script a week before voiceover started and without actually seeing the game. And composer Martin O'Donnell had to score all of the cutscenes in just 3 days.
Cool.
The devs had to scrap their idea for the multiplayer because Xbox Live wouldn't be ready in time. And in just 4 months before release, the team had to redesign the whole multiplayer system.
Which is interesting because the multiplayer turned out dope.
Yes.
It's so good.
And, I mean, spawned... It didn't spawn LAN parties. LAN parties already existed, but console LAN parties were very few and far between.
It reignited the love of the LAN party.
Exactly. And certainly. I mean, I think the LAN party that I had before Halo was probably Command and Conquer.
Ooh.
Spicy. I think, yeah, that was the only LAN party that I ever had growing up. And then Halo came out, and then Halo LAN parties
yes.
all the fucking time.
Yeah.
Nevertheless, even with Bill Gates breathing down their necks, Bungie released Halo Combat Evolved November 15th, 2001, and everything changed as far as gaming and first-person consoles, or first-person shooters on consoles went. I say that with full confidence because what we'll get into with Halo 2, we see the trace of Halo in almost every multiplayer game
yeah,
moving forward.
Every multiplayer game and probably every FPS as well.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, we talked about this last episode, but this is the dawn of regenerating health.
Exactly.
Which is something that we're literally still seeing almost 20 years after the fact.
Exactly. Not since GoldenEye for Nintendo 64 had a first-person shooter on console been so well-received. Despite that, the game didn't take instantly. In 5 months, it only sold 1 million copies. Nothing to sneeze at, but definitively Bungie's... nothing to sneeze at, and definitively Bungie's best-selling game to date. But it certainly wasn't done. The game was moving consoles left, right, and center, and in just 5 years, the Xbox version sold 4.2 million copies and just over 600,000 copies on computers, earning it just shy of $200 million.
Nice.
That is before we got into the remakes, before we got into the Master Chief Collection, before we did anything like that. That was just in 5 years, $200 million. So that's around 2006.
Well, and think about this, right? Because I'm sure we'll get into this in a minute, but Halo 2 at the time was the highest selling piece of media ever.
Mm-hmm.
And so what that means is, to a certain degree, Halo Combat Evolved was a $200 million trailer for Halo 2.
Exactly.
So, and a profitably $200 million profit trailer for Halo 2.
Yeah, that's exactly it. And for whatever reason, for those who don't know, the game starred Master Chief, a badass super soldier of few words known as a Spartan 2, who partnered with a newly developed advanced AI, Cortana. The game starts with the UNSC, United Nations Space Command ship Pillar of Autumn, exiting slipspace and discovering a ring world.
And then it crashes.
Pursued by the aliens known as the Covenant, a theocratic military collective of diverse alien species united under religious ideology, the captain of the Autumn, Jacob Keyes, entrusts the ship's AI Cortana to Master Chief as he crash lands, on the Ring World.
And then you get a Warthog.
We'll be fine.
Master Chief and Cortana are tasked with saving as many crew as they can.
With a Warthog.
All the while preventing the Covenant from learning the whereabouts of Earth.
Warp, warp, warp.
During their mission, they discover the Ring World is actually a huge weapon the Covenant call Halo. An ancient relic from a long
Weird,
destroyed...
Weird, because they don't have Christianity.
long destroyed, highly advanced alien super race known as the Forerunners. As Chief and Cortana race the Covenant for control over the Halo... Halo weapon, they discover another alien race hiding among the ancient tech, the Flood.
Zombies!
The Flood,
zombies.
A parasitic insect race that can control both humans zombies. And Covenant by infecting them. It's discovered that the power...
Notably, don't say...
It's discovered that the power of Halo is intended to starve the Flood by eradicating their food source.
I thought the power of Halo was inside of us life. All along.
Yes, of course. Always. Interestingly, just before the game's release... The book Halo, The Fall of Reach came out by Eric Nyland.
Oh.
So people, a lot of people think that Fall of Reach came out after the game.
Yeah,
actually,
I did.
Huh?
I thought so.
Yeah, it actually came out beforehand. For people who don't know, The Fall of Reach is a prequel to what occurs in Combat Evolved.
It's Halo Reach.
Yes. But
it's Halo Reach.
If people don't know the plot of Halo, which I just described.
Yeah.
Then they're probably not going to know what the Fall of Reach is.
Well, it's like Halo, but there's a place called Reach and it falls.
Yeah, clearly, clearly. But at first, Bungie opposed the idea of having any book explaining anything about Master Chief. But according to Eric Trotman, the writer of the first game, he and the other Halo writers strong-armed Bungie by offering that the book be written and published in exchange for them to finish the... last 20% of the only 80% done game script.
Ooh, blackmail.
Yeah.
Sweet. Whoa.
I wouldn't say blackmail. I would say strong army. Because they weren't hired by
Bungie. No, it's not blackmail. It's extortion.
Exactly.
There we go.
Closer to extortion.
It's extortion.
Strong army. Strong army. That's the non-illegal way.
It's like an Italian guy comes in your bakery and is like, breaking this window. Better pay me for protection.
Man.
That is extortion. That's
people
exactly
all up in here busting up your windows. You should get some protection.
Bungie relented, and with the Halo story bible in hand, Nyland went to work on establishing the very first glimpse into the Haloverse. I can't emphasize how much this game changed the industry. Not only did it incorporate twin analog sticks for tighter controls, it implemented intuitive AI, strong gun mechanics, a heads-up display that could indicate moving or firing enemies, a switch third-person perspective for vehicle segments, and even a co-op story mode. Halo had it all, and even though their multiplayer was completely redesigned without network capabilities, it still spawned LAN parties for players the world over. The game also launched sequels, countless toys, a book series, animated films, and even TV shows. It also inspired fan-created shows like Red vs. Blue. Yes, there is. There's actually technically two. It's not like TV as in cable television show, but like a series, a live-action series.
Oh, sure. Okay.
Yeah. It also inspired fan-created shows like Red vs. Blue, the now large internet-based media company Rooster Teeth's first project, and though Red vs. Blue wasn't the first use of machinima, the use of 3D engines to create short films, it was one of the largest successes, and certainly the longest-running series, as it still continues its story to this day. So,
yeah. Again, Red vs. Blue, I think, was 2003?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, so it's been going for 16 years.
So 16 seasons of Red vs. Blue, and all because the... work that they could do in the in the Halo engine. The game wasn't just massive. It defined what a console shooter should feel like, should feel and look like. Without Bungie's Halo, the gaming industry would look a lot different these days, which brings us to the next era of Bungie.
Halo 2.
Halo 2. Halo nice. Continues. But yeah, we kind of talked about it midway through this segment here, but I do think that there are a lot of things that could have went differently for Halo. Not only could it have been an RTS, not only could it have been developed and published in-house, it could have been a third-person shooter, it could have been owned by Activision back in 2000, it could have been just a solo release for the Mac. There are so many different milestones that could have redefined the generations to come from this game. Just because we know how much effect Halo has had on the gaming industry.
Yeah.
I think it's crazy.
A huge number of coincidences had to kind of click into place.
Exactly. And again, Bill Gates throwing money at a problem and a console that, I don't know about you guys, but when I heard about the Xbox, I thought, eh, it sounds cool, but how are you ever going to compete with what was already around?
The PlayStation.
PlayStation, Nintendo.
True.
And actually, Sega still.
Sega!
Dreamcast. Yeah, the Dreamcast was still around, that's right.
Yeah. I honestly thought that Microsoft was going to be dead on arrival, as far as their gaming console goes.
You think that's what we're thinking about the Stadia?
No, I think that will actually be dead on arrival. I think I was, I think I was 11. I didn't understand the gaming industry when the original Xbox came out, or 12. And so, you know,
don't worry. If the Stadia adjusts its time manipulation technology, then while you're 11, you'll be able to understand it better.
Shoutouts to
the Hit Continue podcast, episode 155.
Get our jokes there.
This is a no joke show. No joke show. You get the jokes on the other show.
Super serious all the time.
Yeah. All right. So work began on Halo 2 almost immediately, releasing in November of 2004, shortly after Combat Evolved, just 3 years after Halo. With the success of the first game, there was no doubt that Bungie would tackle a sequel, especially considering that their previous top sellers, Marathon and Myth, got sequels. However, more like Marathon than Myth, Bungie didn't have any specific plans for sequels. They did, however, know that they left a lot on the table with Halo CE. And I'm going to just refer to Combat Evolved typically as CE.
Collector's Edition.
See, I just always refer to it as Halo. Halo, yeah. Halo 2, Halo 3.
And just...
Yeah.
With how many times I'm going to have to say Halo... I'm just going to say CE.
Okay.
Yeah. They left a lot on the table with Halo CE and were excited to see what they could put together for Halo 2. Though many people were simply wanting a Halo 1.5, Bungie wanted to do more. Unfortunately, this time, without one of their creators, Alex Seropian, he, at this point, leaves the company, never to return, giving most of the reins to his creative partner, Jason Jones, in 2002.
What's Alex Seropian up to lately?
He was recently... So he... One of the reasons he left is that he cited that the game development process wasn't exactly why he wanted to get into games and the gaming industry. So he was part of the programming and developing side, but that wasn't exactly what he wanted to do with games. He took a small hiatus for a time and then created another studio. And I think that one went under, and another studio that got bought by Disney, and he was working with them for a period, but has recently just been let go.
Ah.
Yeah. For various reasons. But I kind of want to eventually, when we finish this history of Bungie, I want to talk about some of the main players of Bungie and kind of just where are they now? Because I think that's actually really interesting, especially considering what we'll eventually talk about with Destiny. So, apparently Jones was never the president of Bungie. Seropian left that to another guy named Harold Ryan, who was their test manager. But Jones, during Halo 2, he still remained the project lead, but that wasn't without its own trials as well. Sometime during the development of Halo 2, Jones stepped away from the game to develop another game, Project Phoenix. Not a lot is known about Project Phoenix. It started development shortly after the first and second Myth game. Like, somewhere in that zone.
Yeah.
There's no official dates for it because it never came out. What we know of it is some dev photos, concept art, and a couple of interviews with Jones. Many years past the release of Halo 2, Jones described that Phoenix would have been something close to Minecraft, featuring intricate block-building mechanics, but unlike Minecraft, it would focus heavily on conducting fantasy sieges.
And have a fucking Phoenix in it!
I think it was just a code name.
Oh, that's lame.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Effectively, an evolution of the Myth series, so to speak. But alas, the game would never see the light of day. But we'll get into that. So, along with updating the UI in Halo 2, Bungie made some pretty significant changes. Dual-wielding weapons being the most predominant, as it was experienced most frequently, sticks out in people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
But Bungie also introduced boarding mechanics for vehicles for both the players and the AI.
Hooray!
Yeah, they revamped the health system, which was the regenerating health.
The vehicles could explode.
Yeah.
Which I was really pissed about at the time.
Yeah! Dude, Invincible Warthogs was the shit.
It was the shit, and then it was shitty because Warthogs became less and less enjoyable.
Because for balance reasons, they need to be able to die.
Well, especially once we get into the multiplayer aspect of Halo 2. But yes. It's just, make them invincible in single player.
Also, how sweet was dual-wielding Needlers?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was godly.
Bungie never quite able to figure out the balance for the Needler.
Yeah, they would either tone it up or tone it way too fucking down.
It was either like being very gently cuddled by a kitten, or it was like having a tactical nuke dark drop directly on your skull.
So, one of the interesting documentaries that I watched on the first Halo, they were describing that when you rescue Jacob Keys from the Covenant ship in Halo, the first Halo, there was a AI bug with him where he was going to shoot the first dead elite that he saw, just, you know, kind of double tap effectively.
Yeah.
But he spawns with a Needler weapon. And so while he was aiming down at the first dead elite that he saw, he'd fire a full clip into the dead elite and then explode, which would cause the mission to fail.
Ooh. Tough break. So, that's great.
Yeah, that was original one of their original bugs that they had to program out before launch.
I would have left that in.
I know. But nevertheless, the health system was changed by the shields being rechargeable and the health bar being invisible and significantly reworked the specs. They also significantly reworked the specs of the guns and added several more options. One of the more vocal complaints for the first game was, though each game felt gun felt awesome and great to use, they were quite a far step from their real-world counterparts. To remedy that, designers actually went out and worked with Marines to learn not only how the guns looked, felt, and sounded, but also how soldiers move through a battlefield. So on top of updating the foundations of the game, the guns of the game, the Marine AI in Halo 2 was also significantly updated as well. So actual movement patterns came into effect, tactics for the Marines as they would move through a level with you, rather than them just kind of running in clumps, which is effectively what they were doing in Halo CE. Yeah.
Halo 2 also notably was boldly released at 95% completion, with the last 5% of the story completely missing.
Way more than the last 5%. We'll get into it. On top of all that, the team was also excited to get their chance to make an online multiplayer, because they had described it for the first one. Xbox Live released in November 2002, so a year after the original Halo launched, and was met with generally positive reviews. Bungie was ready to bring that service to the next level. So in Halo 2's multiplayer, they reintroduced game types like
Capture the Flag.
Yes, Capture the Flag, King of the Hill, Oddball, Race, and Slayer. But they also introduced Juggernaut, Assault, and Territories.
Juggernaut.
All of which played off the classic modes introduced in CE. Pushing the automation and accessibility of Xbox Live, Halo 2 featured an ability to choose these game modes, and then with just a press of the button, it could find you a match. This was something completely new to the gaming world, and this is what
were
I'm
saying. Were they the first people to do matchmaking?
Sort of. This style of matchmaking, if you actually remember PC games and Mac games of old, before this, there was a style of matchmaking, but it was very, very different.
Yeah. I remember like StarCraft, for example, where you would populate, there would be a populated list where it was like, hey, these guys are doing Slayer, these guys are doing TDM, these guys are doing Oddball, and they're waiting for enough people to join so that they can fire their game.
That's exactly it. Matchmaking required you to search through a list of servers to find the one that fit your preferences.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah. Preferences in Halo 2 could be highly customized to further specify exactly the style of game you wanted to play. In order to make the multiplayer more enjoyable for groups, they even created a carryover function that meant you could squad up with other people online and stay as a group from match to match. Again, this is probably one of those things we as gamers can take for granted these days. In a lot of cases, in the way back, players would have to communicate to share or share their server or shared the server they were going to enter and have their friends join on that same server. So we used peripherals, or there was direct messaging that you could do on like Battle.net and stuff like
or
that.
Or you'd literally be in the same room as someone and be like, oh, here's a server with a cool title. Let's go in this one.
Yeah, and because this was also the 90s, you couldn't really pick up a phone and call your friend to tell him what server you were on because dial-up internet still existed. Not the 90s. This was whatever, late 90s.
This is the mid-2000s. Early mid-2000s.
Yeah. But with Halo 2's new design, this cut out all the hassle and allowed players to connect with each other that much easier. This design was then carried over into the general accessibility of Xbox Live and into the greater multiplayer design structure for most games to come after Halo 2. So, squad functions. The whole way that our current generation, PlayStation 4 and Xbox One, work as far as their online structure goes, where you friends list and all that stuff. That was all originally designed by Bungie.
Damn.
And the way that we carry over, the voice chat systems, so on and so forth, all designed by Bungie, that was then kind of pilfered and stolen and upgraded as we went along since Halo 2. But that wasn't the only depth Bungie created for their multiplayer. In order to evoke a level of personal creativity and uniqueness, Bungie carried forward the color customization from CE and added clans. The customization for clan takes...
Clans.
Yeah, the customization for clan takes and personal symbols as well. But wait, there's more. Bungie also created proximity voice chat.
Whoa!
Proximity voice chat.
Yeah. The closer you get, the more you'll hear them.
Yeah, exactly. So players could interact with enemy combatants, just in general, when they would kill each other or someone would die, and you could yell, like, I'm gonna teabag your mom! Because that was where that came from.
That's weak.
Yeah. They also introduced death indicators to support team play, rankings to show player progression, stats for interesting personal information, post-match awards to players, and the ability to play as an elite or a Spartan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that was in multiplayer.
That's right.
And campaign.
And I remember that you wanted to typically play as a Spartan because the elites had larger heads and were more likely to be killed by headshots.
Only slightly. This is actually a big problem that came later in Halo 3. Halo 2 had not negligible. People obviously did note them, but it was more apparent when they were trying to really differentiate between elites and Spartans.
Okay.
Right, so now
it,
they were
trying. Becomes more of an issue in Halo 3.
Yeah, exactly.
They
also took on the Herculean effort to not only intensify the structure design of their maps, but also create maps that could be identified as portions of the campaign itself. In this, they allowed themselves to design maps asymmetrically rather than what they had in CE. It was a fucking haul, to say the least, and I can't emphasize this enough. This changed everything again.
Yeah.
Servers for Halo 2 ran up to the end of Xbox Live in April, the original Xbox Live. We also obviously got
new iterations. Yes, we continue to have Xbox Live.
Yeah, but this was for the original Xbox.
Yes.
In April of 2010, but interestingly, for 3.5 weeks later...
Oh, this was so cool.
Yeah, a dedicated group of players were able to continue playing by leaving their Xboxes on and their sessions open. One by one, failures on the Xbox, internet drops, power outages, and eventually bootings were the only thing that knocked these players out of the system.
Yeah, they eventually just straight... There was like 3 people left, and they were like, listen, guys.
Yeah.
And they just kicked them off.
And Xbox, Microsoft just was like, bink, and knocked them off. They have become known as the Noble 14. And they exemplified to game companies that great games will always have followers. Which, we kind of talked about this in the last episode about how Myth 2 had a dedicated group like this as well.
Yes.
Which
that exists to this day.
Yeah. And it's just something about Bungie. They get people on their sides. And it feels less so with what we've seen with their current iteration or... Yeah. What there was their current iteration, which we'll get into episode 3. But they have an ability to really draw in and expand and support their community, which was always something really cool. Much like the multiplayer, the plot has also thickened for Halo 2. As we discussed in episode 1, pre-Halo, Marathon Infinite was Bungie's first showing of creating a playable character out of what was once your enemy, which was then carried into Halo 2. Through the campaign, players switch between playing Master Chief
and the Arbiter.
And Thal Vadam. Or he has Arbiter. A name? Yeah, Thal Vadam.
I did not know the Arbiter had a name.
Exactly. He is the disgraced elite commander who failed to secure and protect the Halo weapon in Combat Evolved, and he was voiced by Keith David, which was so great. Muy caliente.
Yeah.
The position of Arbiter is granted to Thal Vadam by the High Prophets of the Covenant because they believe that their religious mission is in extraordinary crisis. While the High Prophets send their newly appointed Arbiter on assassination runs, Master Chief is defending Earth from one of the Covenant's prophets who has discovered Earth's location.
Why, that would be the Prophet of Regret.
Yes, it would be.
Yes, because I remember we regret being alien bastards.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, I can't remember what the whole line is.
Sergeant Johnson's...
Sergeant Avery Johnson. Bless him.
Yeah. After Chief defeats another highly... After Chief defeats another highly regarded Covenant force, the alien collective is thrown further into chaos as the remaining prophets trade the right to their protective detail from the elite race to the brutes. Chief finds another Halo installation known as Delta Halo, or Installation 5, and while he is fighting once again against the Covenant for the control over the weapon, the Arbiter finds himself being betrayed by the leader of the brutes, Tartarus. On Delta Halo, the Flood are rediscovered, and most importantly, the Gravemind, the parasitic hive mind that speaks for the Flood. It reveals itself by saving slash capturing the Chief and the Arbiter and brokering a truce between the two rivals. Chief and Arbiter are then sent on separate missions to prevent the destruction of sentient life as the Covenant are trying to activate the Halo rings. As for the reception for Halo 2, the new title once again broke Bungie's record for bestseller and also set a pretty high bar in the gaming industry, being the best-selling media of all time. 3 weeks before release, Halo 2 was reported to have 1.5 million copies pre-ordered and nearly 8.5 million copies worldwide, as last reported in 2008, which was just 4 years, which is fucking crazy.
Dear humanity, we regret being alien bastards. We regret coming to Earth, and we most definitely regret that the Corps just blew up our raggedy-ass fleet.
Hoorah!
Thank you.
Yep.
I knew one of you would do it.
It's what James is here for.
Bless him.
Yeah. The multiplayer really redefined what we understood as multiplayer, and people still regard it as some of their best experiences online. However, very late into the game's dev cycle, Jones and Project Phoenix team, remember that game that didn't exist, didn't come out,
right?
Had to be scavenged, resulting in Phoenix never to rise from its ashes. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Though Halo 2 shipped, Bungie was disappointed with the final result, and so were fans. The campaign was highly criticized for being too short and underselling the promises and perceptions players got from promotional material leading up to release, which was, you know, not finishing the fight, but like defending Earth and doing that.
Finishing the fight was the next one.
No.
Yeah, that was Halo 3.
I also have a joke about that. Doesn't matter. Even with Project Phoenix and Jones back in the saddle, Bungie had to cut a full act from the game. So not 95%, but the full third act of the game had to be cut.
66%. 66% of the game. Two acts.
Yes.
Out of three.
Yes. Got released.
Yeah.
The way that you phrased it, it was like,
listen,
one act was cut and that was 66%.
Listen, we ended on a cliffhanger.
Yeah. Simply, they ran out of time to tell the full story. Luckily, this wasn't the end, as we all know. They needed to finish the fight.
Heh. That's not even a joke.
It's not a joke. I was just trying to lead up to it. Just let me cue Halo 3.
It's barely even
Halo
a thought.
3!
Everyone's favorite multiplayer.
Launching September of 2007, Halo 3 was one of the highest anticipated games of all time. Not only did players want an updated multiplayer, they wanted to see the player see and play the conclusion of Master Chief's story, all of which would be conclusion, quote
yes.
unquote.
Yeah. Very large air quotes, the conclusion.
However, it would be Bungie's conclusion of Master Chief's story.
Well, and honestly, if you played Halo 1, 2, and 3 and then stopped, you would have a pretty decent arc.
Yeah, it would be great.
You could call that a complete story.
I would say you absolutely can. It's the end of the Human Covenant War.
Yeah.
But all of which, this would be featured on Xbox's second console, the Xbox 360. Not to say too much about the 360, but for its time, this thing was a powerhouse and a titan of the gaming world. Bungie was excited, but Jones wasn't. Jones revealed to Bungie that he didn't like sequels and needed to take a sabbatical from the company. Stepping up, Harold Ryan, the once test manager for Bungie, took the reins of leading the Halo 3 project, which was no small feat because with a more powerful engine, there became more work. So at this point in Bungie's history, Seropian and Jones are away from the company. The two original founders, or the founders, not original founders, they're just founders.
They just founded the company.
Yeah, which is, we're going to see as this series goes, a lot of changes are going to happen.
Change.
Like, Seropian and Jones held the reins for a long time. Harold Ryan held the reins for a decent amount as well. And now it's just change, 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 change. But before we get into the sort of development of the game, let's first round out the plot. Players once again dive into following Master Chief and the Arbiter, but this time as close allies rather than tentative ones. And for the first time, Master Chief isn't without his closest companion, Cortana, who is left behind in the hands of the Flood at the end of Halo 2. Earth is in full-scale invasion by the Covenant and eventually the Flood themselves. Narrowly protecting the Earth from the Flood, Infection, Chief Arbiter, and a ragtag bunch of cooperative humans and elites, including Avery Johnson,
Hoorah!
Chase after the Last Hoorah! Prophet and search for the Halo-connecting weapon known as the Ark. Once again, Chief and Arbiter are forced into a situation to side with Gravemind as they need to prevent the Covenant from destroying all sentient life in the galaxy. But afterwards, Gravemind quickly turns on the two. Chief and Arbiter are forced to cooperate with the not-so-trustworthy series favorite love-to-hate AI, 343 Guilty Spark. And after another betrayal, Chief and Arbiter are able to destroy the Flood.
Hey, hold on, back the fuck up. Yeah. We can't just walk over that betrayal like it's no big fucking deal.
I don't want to spoil it.
It's a 12-year-old game.
I'm allowing people...
Spoilers for Halo, fast forward 5 minutes.
No, I don't. This is not this show. This show is just about the history.
Yeah, if we that's some important... You know what this is? This is about the revisionist history.
Let me get through this, please.
Uh-huh.
Scott, during their escape... off the exploding superweapon, the UNSC ship forward onto Dawn is split in two. The front sends the Arbiter with the surviving humans back to Earth, and the back, holding Master Chief and Cortana, careens into the black void of space. The ending of Halo 3 was well received by fans and critics as it definitively ended the arc of the Human Covenant War, but also left just enough of a trace of potential sequels to come. However, that would not be coming from Bungie. With Halo 2... while Halo 2 was still developing new content for multiplayer, the first stages of Halo 3 entered into pre-production. The first script and early storyboards were created. However, composer and lead sound designer Martin O'Donnell made a note that the story didn't have enough weight and consequence. As a result, death became an important tool for the creators.
No!
On a personal note, it's because of this, I really feel like Halo 3 was the best game I think Reach is probably the best game that Bungie has ever developed, but as far as the Master Chief character following him, Halo 3, it evolved all the right things to where it needed to be. The story got that much better. There was real weight. There was real consequences. Characters that we loved died.
No!
I wanted to get into it, but just kind of around it. Walk around it a bit, so we don't have to necessarily spoil it.
So we don't have to mention the tragic death at the end of Halo 3.
Exactly. Deaths. Good point.
That's fair.
You know, war is hell, guys. Speaking of which, Ron Perlman was also in this game.
Was he?
Yeah.
Really?
Yep.
Who is Ron Perlman in this game?
Shit. I can't remember his name off the top of my head, but he's basically the fleet admiral that leads the final forces in Halo 3.
Yeah, he's Admiral Ron Perlman.
I can't remember his name off the top of my head. That's going to really bug me.
It's like how Michael Ironside is Sam Fisher, but he's basically just secret spy Michael Ironside.
Yeah, exactly. This is just Admiral Ron Perlman, as you said.
Yeah, Admiral Ron Perlman. I get it.
Are you looking up his character in Halo?
Yep.
Yeah, thank you. Though the script and story was still hotly debated as to what it meant and what really was the story of Halo, work was ironed out and development began... Comparatively to the previous two installments, New wasn't necessarily the name of this game. Instead, due to the higher demand for stronger graphics and resolutions and design stemming from the new hardware, the focus seemingly was directed to smoothing and refining what Bungie had already created. Though new vehicles and guns were added, they also felt that much tighter and better to use. Water became not just a part of the environment, but an interactable aspect to the design and AI. The AI and enemies expanded in scope and depth, and damage to players, NPCs, vehicles, and environment became that much more immersive.
Also, really quick, Lord Terrence Hood is the character he voices.
Thank you. Yeah, he's the one who shakes the Arbiter's hand at the very, very end of Halo 3.
Sure.
Yeah. Gameplay also saw an expansion as Bungie implemented a newfound equipment system. Halo had always had support pickups like active camo, but Halo 3 was the first time players could dictate when an item would be used. Though the equipment was single use, it gave players the freedom and creativity to overcome obstacles in their own unique way. Equipment featured bubble shields, power drain, trip mines, portable gravity lifts, radar jammers, flares, regenerators, and automated turrets. Along with all that, gameplay to story was much smoother. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I was looking up Ron Perlman.
Mm-hmm.
And I just found out that he's in a Monster Hunter film that's coming out next year.
Yeah, we've talked about this on the original, on the normal show.
Okay.
We have.
I didn't know about this.
Because it's featuring Mila Jovovich and...
It's your boy, Paul W.S. Anderson.
I know, it's Paul W.S. Anderson and Ong Bak.
Yeah, do you want help?
Yeah, go ahead.
Tony Jaa,
thank you. Anyways, back to what we were talking about. Bungie Incorporated 3 levels of
cinematics. I am listening, I promise.
Bungie Incorporated 3 levels of cinematics. A classic letterbox, which had been used in the previous two installments, was smoothed as seamlessly as possible transition to the player from gameplay to story. Perspective cinematic, which was actually in-game events that could be seen through cinematic view, but would also continue even if skipped to still exist within gameplay. The one that I always think of, and the one they show most often, is when you're exiting out of the jungle in the very first mission, you can zoom down and see that a brute is beating the shit out of a human. And if you just skip it, you can actually save the human before that brute kills him.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it's in cinematic view. It kind of like shrinks down. You don't get... I don't know. It's kind of cool. I like that. Perspective cinematic... Yeah, sorry. And lastly, the Cortana effect.
Real fucking professional, Greg. Yeah,
you know what? Shut up. And lastly, the Cortana effect, which overlaid images of Cortana driving Chief Ford to his goals. You know, this is really hard, Scott. Like to see you put together all this script, all this research.
Now I'm good.
This, of course, increased the load of dialogue and potential dialogue of all situations and gameplay options throughout. Martin O'Donnell noted that they recorded over 35,000 lines of combat dialogue to make sure players were that much more immersed in this installment.
And boy, were we.
I mean, 35,000 lines of dialogue.
I don't even mean that sarcastically. Uh-huh. We were totally way more immersed.
Yeah. Multiplayer also expanded and was smoothed in every way it could. Notably, it brought several new game modes to challenge and engage players, one of which was Forge, a game mode that allowed players the ability to customize maps and game modes.
Woo!
This marked the return of what Bungie had done with Soulblighter nearly 10 years ago, and much like Soulblighter, this marked a forever group of fans dedicated in using the play space that Bungie afforded them. Later, an updated version deemed Forge 2.0 would be released, and even still, players are making maps within it, and most current versions available.
Yeah, this is when we get all the awesome custom game modes and goofy shit.
Exactly. And, I mean, I think it's fair to say that this was people's... As far as Halo fans go, there is a division between what Halo 3 ODST brought, what Reach brought, even though 2.0 came out with Halo Reach... and definitely what we got with later installments with 343 Industries, which we won't get into until we cover 343 Industries history, but it's pretty short. And
might be a little bit later in this episode, might be a little earlier in the next episode. Yeah.
I mean, this is not the history of Halo. This is the history of Bungie, so we won't even talk about...
We don't even need to talk about 343
Industries. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Get fucked, Microsoft!
Yeah, exactly. What also stuck out for Halo 3 was its marketing campaign. The first teaser for the game was released at E3 2006 under the goal to provide intrigue and mystery as to what mayhem had been wrought from the events of Halo 2. Oh, that was that really so hype one where cool. It's like looking through the desolation.
Diorama?
Yeah.
So cool.
Yes.
It Loved
was
it.
Fucking amazing. The next trailer was dubbed Starry Night. This was the first time that Bungie incorporated live-action elements into their trailers.
Oh, I remember
and in
this.
Just 24 hours, the trailer absolutely blew up online, going viral. This was fucking awesome. This is where we got...
Is this the guy who was going through the Spartan program?
No. This is two kids lying and looking at Starry Night. They're in long grass, and they're talking about it, and it's kind of implied that it's John talking yes. with somebody else.
Mm.
And then it eventually clicks, and... We get to see Master Chief.
Yeah.
He throws down that first bubble shield.
Yes.
Boom. And then he goes running off the cliff, jumps down, and starts shooting.
That's where it's just like, really, because like it was a big explosion, and he's just like waking up, and then it's just like, where's Chief? I think we lost him. He's like, not yet.
Yeah.
And bubble shield.
Yep.
Yeah.
So good.
So shortly after that, Bungie partnered with Neil Blomkamp and Weta Workshop and released a few more live-action trailers.
I remember these.
It was these trailers that prompted speculation and rumors that were eventually founded to be true that a Halo movie would be in the works with Blomkamp as the director and Peter Jackson as the producer.
I remember those days. Those were good days.
Unfortunately.
Well, mm-hmm. well, you know.
Deals and funding for the project eventually fell through.
However, we got District 9 out of it.
The movie District 9 was created by using the salvage parts from the failed project.
Yeah.
Yay!
That was nice. District 9 was good.
It's a great movie. It also launched that one guy's career.
Charlto Copley.
Yeah,
Charlto Copley.
Yeah, exactly. Along with these, the marketing involved released a public beta packaged with the game Crackdown, which helped the new IP's sales.
Dude, Crackdown was dope. The first one.
But
every subsequent Crackdown has been bad.
But a lot of people just got into that game.
For the Halo 3 demo.
Exactly.
Absolutely.
So that's the power of Halo at this point.
I remember being a kid and actually being like kind of resentful.
Yeah.
Because I got Crackdown because I wanted Crackdown. And I literally didn't touch the Halo 3 demo because I was not
a Halo kid.
Well, and I've never been an FPS guy.
Yeah.
So I was all like, yeah, Crackdown is so good. And everything I saw online was like, what the fuck's going on with Halo 3? And I'm like, but I want to talk about Crackdown, guys. It was really fun.
There's no community for you, Scott.
There's no R Crackdown yet.
You can get the Batmobile, though. It was so cool.
No community for you.
And then every other Crackdown was really bad.
Marketing also included alternate reality gaming, comics, and so much more. This marketing was literally award-winning. Microsoft spent $40 million on the marketing campaign alone. As a result of the hard work and marketing, Halo 3 once again broke all the records. On its first day, it reached 170 mil, and by its first 12 days, had sold 3.3 million copies. By 2012, the game had sold 14.5 million copies worldwide. This was also after the wake of major leaks of the game, which Bungie had Microsoft ban those caught with the pirated versions of the game from Xbox Live until the year 9999.
Tough break.
That is a forever ban.
That's so good. I love it.
Due to its success, however, some credit Halo 3 as one of the bigger influences in normalizing gaming to the world. So what we got with LAN parties in Halo 1 eventually grew into what we got in competitive multiplayer in Halo 2, which was not the beginning of esports by any means, but there were seeds of it. There was a scene for it. There were tournaments being held in various locations that could span several different places. People were still using LAN still to go back and forth and smoother connections, so on and so forth. By the time that we got to Halo 3, everyone was talking about Halo 3. Those live action trailers that we were talking about, those were getting shown at like in the commercial breaks for the NFL games.
Yeah.
We were seeing them just on daytime television. Like you would, Friends, but whatever sitcom that you were watching at the time.
They played ahead of like major motion pictures, like as in the same conversations as movie trailers.
Exactly. And people who weren't just nerds and gamers at this point, because again, this was 2007. We were talking about this on the Hit Continue podcast about like, we were all bad people because the amount of hate and bigotry that existed before the world got woke.
Yeah.
If you were alive, you probably said some terrible shit and you learned that it was terrible shit as life went on. But part of that was also people's perception of what gamers were. And we were finally getting more and more normalized during this point around that 2007 mark.
Nice.
However, not everything was all sunshine and rainbows. Growing from within Bungie, much like it had in the past when the original deal with Microsoft had been signed, a change needed to come. On October 5th, 2007, just a month-ish before, around a month after the game had released, Bungie announced that it would be separating itself from Microsoft.
Bah, bah, bah.
They even drew up a declaration of independence that every full-time employee at Bungie signed. No longer were they going to be under Microsoft. Instead, Microsoft would retain a minority stake in Bungie to maintain publishing and exclusivity rights to all things Halo. Harold Ryan, the then president of Bungie, stated in an interview, "To split amicably, we'll make a couple more Halo games and then leave it in Microsoft's hands." And more depressingly, that's the end of that quote. And more depressingly, quote, "The price of our independence was leaving our baby behind," end quote.
Huh.
That fucking is hard to wrap your head around, I think.
We've officially hit the end of Empire Strikes Back portion of Bungie's history.
Mm-hmm, basically.
Yeah, we're getting into Return of the Jedi here in a minute.
Yep. Yeah, yeah. And then we get into the prequel trilogy.
It's true.
Instead of Bungie products exclusively going to Microsoft, they were now free to develop wherever they chose to do so. As for what caused the split, there has never been an exact confirmation other than quote-unquote freedom to choose. So any speculation would just be conjecture. But nevertheless, Bungie wasn't done with Microsoft nor Halo. Not yet, that is. And we will get into Halo 3 ODST, Halo Reach,
yeah,
Destiny, and Destiny 2.
Yeah.
In the next episode of Metagame.
Much like Bungie leaving the second episode on a cliffhanger.
A little bit.
Yeah.
A little bit.
Yeah.
But this is the end of the Master Chief trilogy. A lot of people think this is the end of the Master Chief because what will eventually occur through 343 Industries, which I'll talk a little bit about in the next episode as they weren't around until around the development of Halo Reach when they were doing a remaster of Halo Combat Evolved. That was their first. Yeah, that was their first project, was to remake Combat Evolved. I thought it was a great move by Microsoft at the time because it kind of gave them some chops in Halo. 343 was also formed by many of the ex-Bungie employees who wanted to stick with the Halo franchise, but we'll talk about it a little bit more in the next episode. This is Halo. This is the Halo episode. Next episode, we get into the kind of offshoots and Halo Reach, which is considered a lot of people's favorite game of all time, but...
My favorite Halo of all time.
Yeah.
And pretty soon we get to see Bungie fulfill its destiny.
Yes.
That's pretty good.
And also emancipate, manifest destiny.
Hey, well, that's slightly more depressing. Bungie got to manifest the fuck out of their destiny.
No, that joke may have been in the script at some point.
Oh, buddy.
I know.
You're better than that.
I'm not.
No, you're super not. I was just trying to be supportive.
But yeah, this is episode 2. Hope you liked it. Remember to leave a review, rate the podcast on wherever you're getting that podcast, app, whatever thing from, because that allows us to make money.
Oh my God, Greg, what are you doing in that basement? Get it?
I feel like you should say that into the mic.
I know, but I want someone else to say it, because I'm the commander asking where you are. What are you doing?
Finishing this podcast.
Yeah!
And that's it.
Give me the fans their podcast back.